There are a few audiobooks that I have in my library from Audible that I revisit every couple years, maybe some every couple months, depending on how I'm feeling. But one of them that I definitely visit every couple years is A Return to Love by Marianne Williamson. And it's one of those books that is pretty short, and it really just hit home in so many ways and helps me ground back into some beliefs and practices and energy that I like to carry forward in my life. And one of my favorite quotes, you may or may not know it, but I'll just read a little bit of it right now because I love it that much. And it is, "Our deepest fear is not that we are inadequate. Our deepest fear is that we are powerful beyond measure. It's our light, not our darkness, that most frightens us. We ask ourselves, who am I to be brilliant, gorgeous, talented, and fabulous? Actually, who are you not to be?" The quote goes on a little bit, but because I know that you want to get to the episode, I will leave it there. It's definitely a book to check out on Audible. Audible is one of the sponsors for my podcast, and I couldn't be more excited about it because I use Audible and I have used Audible for many, many years. So here's to building your little Audible library and having the books there that you can just pop on whenever you need to have a little reminder of who you really are and how incredible you really are, and how to allow yourself to just be that person. And hopefully you find some of those messages here on this podcast as well. So you can follow the link in my bio in the descriptions for Audible for a free 30-day free trial. And I don't think you'll ever look back from there. It's been a life-changing thing to have an Audible subscription for so many years, and I have an incredible library that I love and cherish. So I hope you find your books as well. And on to the episode.
Oh yeah, it says recording.
Yes. So sorry, I'm so sniffly. I have like so many tissues around.
No worries. Michelle too. Because we just got back from Punta Cana and it was like hot, and then we come back and it's cold, and that gets her every time.
I mean, that's basically like same thing here. It's been warmer, but today's interesting. We can see the mountain like right from here, and it's inspiring at times, you know, like
it's like looking at a painting every day.
Yeah. Every day I look out and I'm like, what's happening? And it's just like crazy clouds and cool. I'm like, oh my God, that's so cool.
Inspirational.
It is. I was writing a song the other day, and I was just like, I was having trouble with it, and I just kept stopping and looking at the mountain, and it was inspiring me truly. I was like, I don't know, something about like the wizard thing, the wizard memes. I don't know why I love them so much. I was like, trying to see if I had anything wizardy to wear for this, and I don't. But
yeah, when we did that album at Rancho de la Luna in Joshua Tree, like you'd see interviews with people that recorded there, and they're like, there's just something, there's like a vibe, you know, like a creative vibe here. And I'm kind of like, okay. And then when you get there, you're like, oh my God, I totally get it.
Yeah. Oh my God. Joshua Tree is incredible. That's probably one of the most magical places I've been to, I feel like.
Yeah, I know. For some reason, like other than going there for the, doing the record, like I've only ever just driven by it.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. Never.
Oh, I didn't realize that. Time.
And, it was so much fun.
And you've never even gone back to Joshua Tree since then?
I kind of want to go back because Scott Reeder's ranch is like out there. And he just bought like the house next to him too. Just because he doesn't like neighbors.
So, that's great.
I know, yeah.
Nothing wrong with that, yeah.
Oh yeah, man, if you can do it, that's amazing. So, yeah, he's got a killer studio out there. And, you know, we've been talking about doing another Sovereign Eagle or something. Maybe,
oh, nice.
Maybe going for that. Yeah. The CKY record is still just taking forever. Like I said, the last one was 2017.
Right. Oh, yeah, that has been. Yeah, that's tough. Well, I guess I should, like, officially start. Thank you for being here. Obviously, we've known each other for a long time. I have to like officially like interviewed you, but we can just like chat. I just have questions. I feel like now I can just ask you the questions that I want to ask you. I'll be like, what do you think about this thing? But yeah. I I wanted to do this podcast really for people who live different lives, live unconventional lives. Obviously, you came to mind when I was like, people to talk to about that. Because I think there's a lot of people who don't fit into, you know, what we're kind of told what we should fit into as we grow up, whether it's from your family or society, whatever. And I just want to have a place where
my counselor in high school told me to have fun working at McDonald's. So, I feel you.
Exactly. And that's the thing that, you know, I think that the landscape is changing now for kiddos, let's just say, or people in general, that they're, besides like, you know, world economics, whatever, but in terms of the possibilities that are there, I want something where people can come and listen to stories about people who have chosen to live, you know, a different life. Yeah. And kind of whatever, you know, like tidbits you want to pass along. Obviously you're a dad, so I'm sure you pass a lot of these things along to your own kiddos, but you know, in the sense too. Yeah. So, yeah. So thank you for sharing.
And I'm like still trying to navigate the music industry that keeps changing every year. When we first started, you would make an album, you'd go on tour to sell more records, like, because that's where the money was. Now you make a record to do tours. It's done complete 180.
What do you prefer?
I don't know. Like anything, there's like, it's a double-edged sword, you know, like making albums has become cheaper, but then you don't get paid like you used to. And then at the same time, the internet and Spotify and all of them, you know, like we just played Poland. Like, we like it's get you everywhere now, you know, like before it was like, if you didn't have albums in stores in that country, it's pointless to go there at all, you know? And, I mean, we played Budapest, we played like places that I would think that no one would have any idea who we were, and the shows were great, you know? So that's the plot.
Right, like your reach, you can actually expand your reach because of the streaming platforms. I mean, that makes sense, yeah. What's your favorite place you've ever played?
Damn, that's a tough question.
Okay, you can give me a few. You don't have to pick just one.
Yeah. Like, crowd-wise, like, as in, like, rabid, crazy fans, sure. Glasgow. Nice. London is always awesome. But like cities that we've played, like not relating to the show, just I enjoyed myself, was like Osaka, Japan was amazing. I really had a good time in Croatia, but the show was pretty bad. That was a country that didn't know us. Yeah.
I really like your country.
But yeah, I'm like, oh, cool. We're playing like right next to a college. Nope. Nobody, like, you know, I'm a spoiled brat. So anything under 100 people and I'm like, boo. So yeah, Croatia was pretty weak. That was probably like 60 or 70 people there. But again, like just to be, even have 70 people know who you are in Zagreb, Croatia is awesome. So I should stop bitching.
I always loved our chats about just like your international travels in general, because I feel like you're one of the people in my life that has really truly seen the world and from such a unique perspective and can really kind of shed light on how the world is different than people may expect in a lot of ways.
Yeah. I feel lucky in that way. Cause like I get to go all over and not necessarily be a tourist. Like there's people there that live there that we hire. And then I'm like, you know, where's the best like breakfast place that you go to? You know, where's the best bar? Like, you know, I don't just go around and do the, oh, sightseeing thing. Like I get to like hang out with people from there and get their vibe and get their whole culture and stuff. Like it's an education you can't pay for, you know?
100%. Awesome. Yeah. I mean, mm-hmm. I did interchanges growing up to different countries. I went to Norway and Spain and Finland. And for a couple of them, we would go like stay with the families, you know, in Norway and Spain.
That's the best.
It was amazing. It was amazing. And I was so young when I did it. I was like 12. And yeah, like ever since then, I was like, I never want to be a tourist. I just want to hang out with the people. I don't need to stand in front of a painting and be like, oh my God, everybody, we all see this painting. Like it's cool, but I would much rather, just hang out with people and see what they're up to, you know?
Definitely. And just different- see like how they live and like what they're into and just... Yeah. It's really fascinating. Some, you know, you can read all the books you want to about Lapland or Iceland or whatever. Like you don't know shit until you go there. And, right. You know,
what's like the most surprising thing you think about, like what you've learned about our world, let's say, from visiting all these places about like being people?
I don't know. I kind of like tend to, it seems like the human response is like to naturally just fear or dislike what you don't know, like what's different to you. And going to all these places and hanging with all these different types of people and things that they do and how they live. And like, you know, it really opens up the world and, you know, just the whole, I don't like, there's a lot of good things I like about America and Americans, but it really pisses me off when there's like just the mindset of like, yeah, this is the best place on earth. It's like, oh, you ever left Wichita? No. You know, like,
right.
How the hell would you know? You know, like, you never left your state even, you know? I don't, that kind of mindset bothers me a lot.
I guess I feel like from people when I meet people from wherever, it's there is the shared human experience. We are all alike in so many ways, even if you know, it's like we kind of all deal with the same human shit, right? Like,
right. I can understand like a dude from Toledo that, you know, he sees a dude from Thailand and he's like, what the fuck? You know, but because they're just different and you don't understand their mannerisms and what they're doing. And like I said, it's just, I guess, a natural human instinct to just, you know, be like, ugh, you know, or whatever. And I don't know. It's just, it's so cool to like hang out in Tokyo or, you know, wherever the hell. And there's no more like cultural differences and stuff like that after you go to these places. And and then you're the weird one, you know? Like, in Japan, I felt like a redwood tree, you know? I'm like 6'4". I'm at the train station. Like I stick out like, I'm like, I can see the tops of everyone's heads and they're looking at me like, what the hell is that guy? And it's fun to be that for a little while.
Right. Yeah. You're like, oh, it's like a humbling. You're like, got it. We're all weird to each other. It's
perfect. I'm the weirdo now, you know? Yeah.
Right.
I like the weirdo.
Me too. Yeah. I like it too. I think, and that's again, like, you know, I've really just kind of leaned into it. I think the older that I get, I'm like, yep, I'm kind of weird. And that's just how it's going to be, you know? Yeah. And I think also like having music connecting, like, again, you get to see from such a unique point of view where you have music that is the connection, right?
That's the language we all speak, you know? Doesn't matter where you are. Like, that's the international language.
It's the language of our soul. So when your guidance counselor said that to you, what did you say back? Or did you say anything?
I was just speechless. But in hindsight, I understand, you know, like he said, like, it's like getting struck by lightning on the steps or something to do music as your career. And it kind of is. And also, like, there was the dudes that were like preppy jock dudes or whatever, and they discovered the Doors like a year ago. And then they're like, oh, I'm going to do music. Like, yeah, tell that guy it's a bad idea. But when I was a senior in high school, like the first half of the first CKY album was already recorded. And I'm like, this fucking album stands amongst my favorite records of all time. So fuck you, Mr. Pyle. You don't know shit. And they told them the same thing too. They were like skateboarding. It was alphabetical, like, and they would just go. So after me, it was Bam, and he's like skateboarding. The guy's like, holy shit.
Like, what are you guys doing?
I know. And the two kids before us, like whoever MA whatever is, they were like going to Cornell, and the one who was going to like law school, you know, like, so yeah. Then he got to us, and he looked like he was about to have a heart attack, you know? But again, Bam had to literally drop out of school because he was already like going to Prague and winning skate contests and doing Nike commercials and probably making more than the fucking teacher. So he was also like, fuck you.
Right. I'm sure.
I'm 15. Like, and what do you make a year? Cause I probably make more. So fuck you.
I won't be at McDonald's. Yeah. Do you feel like looking back, maybe sometimes like those, as not cool as it is to say that to somebody, but it kind of is like, well, yeah, like, well, fuck you. I am going to do the thing. I already was going to do the thing. Now I feel a little bit more like, no, I am doing this.
Yeah. That again, in hindsight, it was so good to be told that because it lights a fire under your ass. Like, fuck you. Like, now you're even more like, dude, I'm going to show that fucking idiot. Like, I'm going to fucking roll up in a sports car next year and say, fuck you.
Bring a McDonald's. You're like, here you go.
Yeah, totally.
Oh my God.
I mean, the funny story is like not even a year later or maybe 2 years later, you know, we got our first like CKY video check from VHS tapes.
I love it.
Really dating ourselves. And, you know, Bam went out and got like a Ferrari Medina. And it just so happened we're in town parking to go to Kildare's or whatever. And there's Mr. Pyle going into the hardware store. And he just looked at us and was just like, fuck.
Oh, have you ever talked to him since?
No, I haven't. I've only run into one teacher from high school. Because his daughter plays lacrosse with my daughter. And yeah, he was the cool. He let me pass by recording a song. The big thing was like a book report. And there's like, there's no fucking way I'm reading that. And what was it? I can't remember.
I mean, I guess if you didn't want to.
It was a book that 17-year-old me was not going to fucking read by any means. And I needed his to pass his class to graduate. I guess he knew this. And he was like, just write a song, like go record with your band a song that's like loosely based on the book. Like, so I just, Google wasn't around then. I looked up like what the basis of the book was about and then wrote a random song about it. And he passed me. So I, at the lacrosse game, when I ran into him, I was like, dude, that was huge. Like, yeah. I still remember that. And thanks.
I feel like that's like a good teacher, right? I mean, granted, you know, whatever, we got, read some of the books, right? But like, but the fact that he could recognize like where, you know, I think education really should be to help hopefully teachers see, you know, and parents see, like where their kiddos are really like peaking, in their interest. And so he saw that and was like, all right, screw it. Like, don't worry about that. But I'm going to still hold you to it. I need you to do what you do.
Yeah.
You need to contribute something.
That's what he said. Like last year when I saw him at the game, he's like, I would never fucking do that, but I could just tell you meant business. So like, and I knew like it was up to me to pass you to graduate. So I just cooked up that idea and I'm glad it worked out for you, you know?
I love that so much. I mean, wait, when did you start playing the drums and like, when did you start getting into music? I don't think I ever asked you that.
So I took drum lessons in like the late 80s at Taylor's.
Yes. And,
yeah. Yep. And, I learned the basics and then I stopped and I didn't start taking music like seriously till like 1994-ish. Okay. Because I met, you know, some of the CKY guys that long ago and I was like, whoa, you know, there's a chance here that, you know, we can make it out of town. Some places like Pittsburgh or something, you know.
Right.
And then that's when I was like, yeah, okay, I'm gonna like give this my all and take it seriously. And John Simone was my drum teacher at Taylor's, and I ran into him at the coffee shop.
Oh, nice.
Probably like 2 or 3 years ago. And I was like, hey, Mr. Simone, awesome to see you, blah, blah, blah. And he just goes, you owe me a new laptop. And I was like, what? What the hell are you talking about? And he said, yeah, I was flipping through Modern Drummer and I saw like some ad, Ludwig ad with you and the Weezer drummer. And I spit coffee all over my laptop.
That's awesome.
He was like, you were like my worst student. Like, definitely. He's like, oh, I was trying to teach you like how to read music and stuff. And all you cared about was like learning Guns N' Roses songs.
That's amazing. I think, well, like, that's an interesting point right in there. Cause I feel like I've heard so many times people who actually end up doing like their career, their passion, you know, or as in a lot of cases, like a lot of what I'm talking about is being multi-passionate. Cause I know I find everything interesting. So, but it's like, you didn't necessarily do a good job of it in the traditional setup or sense. Like I know I also took lessons at Taylor Music with Rich Zerbe, who was great.
Oh, but I remember him.
Yeah, yeah, he was awesome. And he would, I didn't understand what jamming meant. he'd be like, can you, like, I'm going to give you the chords and then you're going to jam over this. And I was like, I don't know what that means. And same thing with piano. I like, basically I would, if there was a keyboard, I would just play with all the sounds and be like, ooh, I love, you know, but yeah. I didn't excel in either of those areas. I just, I think just like the songwriting part of it was just like in me to be able to hear something and put it and like make it real.
Yeah.
But yeah, like saying, you know, I just feel like there's like a lot of people who, it's hard to get us to do what we're supposed to do in some kind of format, you know?
Well, I think most things, absolutely, you have to follow the rules and do it step by step. Music has no fucking rules. You know what I mean? Like, who taught Keith Moon how to play drums? He was a fucking wild animal. Nothing about him made any sense. But he found a bass player, John Entwistle, who like learned his style, and that's why the Who is so fucking insane. There's no rules to this shit. When you're recording, there's no rules either. Throw a fucking microphone in the filing cabinet drawer and see how that sounds, you know.
That's it. I talk about creativity so much for a couple reasons, and I like think I've only like kind of articulating it. I feel so strongly that it's so important that people are creative, whether or not they're like you and I who actually do creative things for work, or, you know, you just like want to make something. I think it's a part of our brain that is so important regardless. It kind of teaches your a mindset or a way to approach things, whether it's just approaching your life or approaching, I don't, the way you just navigate the world. And so much of that is, we have the luxury of doing that as musicians and people who do creative things with paint or whatever. But, you know, do you
that with related art, music, like filmmaking, you know, there's not really rules. And that's great news for me, because I've never been good with rules. Right. I didn't do well at sports. Rules are not my thing.
And directions are not my thing either. I'm like, what? Yeah. I think I definitely just like want to see people, whether like, I feel like there's such a pressure to make something and put it out, you know, to be like, I made this, whatever. And that's cool too. Like, I love that. I love to see what people are making, or, you know, listen to what people are making. But yeah, I just, part of why I'm doing this is just really to encourage people to, because people are like, oh, I'm not creative. And I'm like, well, just let yourself like fuck around for a little bit. See whatever, I don't, you know, make some food or sing something or just move your body. I don't know. Whatever it is that you're kind of like, I want to do that, but I'm not creative. You know, letting yourself just express what wants to come out of you. I really feel like it just helps our humanity as a whole. And I still really can't articulate it as well as I'd like to, but
the weirdest part is like some bands that I listen to, like they're not good musicians by any means. Just collectively, what they're doing is really interesting. And like every time I'm like, okay, everything's fucking been done, blah blah blah, there's a band that shuts me the fuck up. You know, like Sigur Rós from Iceland. Like, what the fuck? Again, not. Phenomenal musicians. The guy's playing a fucking Les Paul with a violin bow, and they record their album in an empty swimming pool. Like, and I'm like, I've never heard anything like that, you know? Bands like that, you know? King Gizzard from Australia is another one. Like, what the fuck is going on? Like, their guitars are tuned like insane. Nothing about it makes sense, but it sounds awesome.
That's so cool. Yeah. I'm always moved by that and feel, obviously as a musician, I'm like, I must think weirder or something, you know, like not bigger, but just like weirder. What else can I, you know?
Yeah. I think when you enter dangerous territory is when you're like, okay, what do people want to hear? Like, you can't do that. Just make the record that you personally want to hear, and if people like it, great, and if they don't, great. You know, obviously you want people to dig it, but like I have to make it where it's like, okay, like this is the album I want to hear. Like if I bought an album, like I would want it to sound like this, you know?
Absolutely.
And people can tell, you know, like they can tell when you're in it, like to make yourself happy. And they can also tell when you phone it in, you know?
Right. And I mean, going back to like that shared, like music is like language of all of us, like, and just that shared experience, when you make something that really is coming from you, like inherently there are other people, finding them obviously is the issue, you know, be able to connect with them. But there are people who are also feeling pretty much exactly the same way, who will get that literal vibration of whatever sound you have put together, you know?
And I'm so burnt out that like the only music I can kind of listen to these days is dudes that like they had to write that song or they'd be dead or in prison. And like, you know, they don't give a fuck if you like it. Like Nick Cave doesn't give a shit if you like his new single. He's like, I have to do this or I'll die.
Right. I mean, I think that is a very shared experience with artists, right? Like we just, it's, I felt that way about the music, the album I just put out. Like I had to do it, you know? I was like, I hope people are into it, but like I have to do it. And I think that's a really honest place. For
it's like your new stuff is fucking so cool. It's huge that you're recording yourself, because that's such a thing too. Like, you know, people say like, oh, CKY doesn't sound like any other band. You know, it's like, I think the reason for that is that, you know, we make our own albums. Like, well, Chad, you know,
right. Yeah.
If you hire some like huge producer, you're going to get like what he does, you know, which is fine. But like he has a method of recording, and it kind of makes every band he works with kind of sound similar, or, you know.
No, it's when, so true. You, I thought about that.
Yeah. Definitely.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, yeah. Chad's sound is so distinct. He's a wizard.
I knew immediately, sure. Like in the 90s when we started recording with Chad, like, I'm like, now what the fuck is he doing? You know, like he's going in the fucking closet to get spray cans, like aerosol cans. And then he's like in a mic, like spray. I'm like, dude, this is my guy. Like, he doesn't give a shit. Like whatever the song needs, like he'll fucking go out and get a trash can lid and hit it with a fucking rock. If that part of the song needs that. You know?
That's so cool. I didn't realize that. That's awesome. I don't remember how you met Chad.
So we were playing gigs in Philly. I mean, this is like super early, like right when I graduated high school. And we like made friends with a bunch of our first gig was opening for G Love in Philly.
Yes! Oh my god.
Throwback. And, random. Yeah, so like we play with Orange 9mm, G Love, and then we would start playing gigs with like local Philly bands at the time. And you know, everybody has their demo tapes, like, oh, check out our demo. And back then, like, you couldn't get a fucking decent sounding recording for less than $20,000, you know?
Yeah.
And I remember this band that we played with, I think they were called Surge, in Northeast Philly, some venue up there. And it's like, oh, here's our demo tape. And, you know, I put it in my tape deck, like on the ride home, just to like hear, you know, like they put on a cool set. And I was like, oh, I wonder how their recording sounds, you know? And it sounded like they went to fucking Abbey Road or something. I was like, how the hell did they get, you know, such like crazy sounds? Like, and I looked on the little tape and it said recorded at the Groundhog in Holland, Pennsylvania. And so immediately we booked time there, and Chad was our engineer.
Oh, wow. And I didn't
know. He liked what we were doing so much that he joined the band.
Wow. I had no idea. That's really cool. That's really
cool. Yeah. And it was cool to have him in the band because he's already done it all. Like he had a deal with Sony Columbia, and I don't know what happened with that, but he learned like what not to do, what to do, you know, cause I had no fucking idea dealing with record labels.
Yeah.
Back then it was such a big business, you know, and there was like the shiesty, like A&R dudes and like, you know, Kiss Babies, blah, blah, blah. Like it, that Tom Hanks movie, like, like it was so accurate. Like the A&R guys, like, you know, they kiss your ass. And then like, you know, the moment you ask for like your fair share of royalties, then, you know, they dump you. Just like,
oh my God,
I've seen it all. Yeah.
Yeah. You're one of the most grounded people that I know, that I've known for a long time. And we come from, let's just say, not the most grounded circle of people. Right? And I've always admired that about you. And I'm curious as to, like, is that just kind of, are you always kind of like that? Or are there things that you do to kind of keep, like when shit hits the fan, how do you kind of regulate and keep yourself grounded and have perspective?
I feel like I learned, this is going to get into like a whole new conversation, but
shut up, it's good.
I've noticed that there's so much like drug problems and stuff with people in music and acting and stuff like that, and I honestly feel like it's because they're chasing the dragon, you know. Like there's no drug that can recreate like going on stage in Stockholm and 2,000 people are fucking singing words that you wrote in your bedroom when you were 18 back at you. Like, that feeling is like euphoric, crazy shit. And I feel like a lot of guys in bands want that feeling all the time. So they chase it with coke or whatever, meth, anything. And I've seen like how fucking dangerous that is. So I just learned to like turn it on and off like a light switch. Like, you know, we just played Punta Cana the other day to fucking a couple thousand people. And then I know just when I get home, like I got to take the trash out and right. do the dishes. You know, like, that's it, like, because you know it's fucking cool to be in a random island in the Caribbean and have again seeing people like that know everything about your band and stuff, and yeah, you have to just be appreciative of that, appreciative, and then know when to just come home and be a regular guy. and being a dad helps too.
I was just gonna ask you. I was like, but you know, not everybody. There's a lot of dads out there, and they're not necessarily getting that message, right? Like, but yeah, probably. I mean, you were how old when you first became a dad?
Super young, 27, something like that.
Okay, yeah,
maybe even younger. Yeah, no, about 26, 27, I think. And yeah, that definitely, I think, saved my life. Because I was definitely going down that path. I moved to LA because, like, you had, especially back then, you had to. Like,
yeah.
I got so sick of flying there like every week. I'm like, what the hell am I doing? I got to just move here because everything is happening here. And then it's so just easy to fall into the LA trap of like, oh, there's a fucking thing at the Henry Fonda tonight. You got to get in. And I was definitely drinking my ass off every night. You know, mixing it with drugs. Like, I never got too gnarly with it, but I was definitely on the road to ruin. And then finding out, like, holy shit, I have a little human that depends on me soon. You know, I gotta not fuck up. That definitely saved me from going down the path that most guys in rock bands do.
Right, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, like most guys in your position are, you're very unique in that sense. Like, there's, you know, there are some people like Fred's another person, very grounded, very like you know, seem to really be connected with what you're doing from your soul and not doing it for just the chasing the dragon of like everyone sing to me while I'm on stage. That's I'm amazing. Yeah, yeah. I'm a guy, whatever, you know.
I just have like amazing gratitude that I could still do this after 25 years and, you know, people still are into what we're doing. And like, I can't say thank you enough to people that, you know, have followed us for so long and make it so that I could keep doing this without having to get some job, you know, like, and that's another thing. Like, I'm happy with playing, you know, the 700 seater in Philly, you know, like, just we played the fucking TLA in 2000 and we'll probably do it next year, you know, like, I'm cool with that.
Yeah,
I've never tried to chase after playing arenas and stuff. I don't give a fuck. As long as I can make it work and, you know, pay my bills and people, that's like another double-edged sword about, like I was saying, like, CKY doesn't sound like anything. It's like, we don't sound like anything. So we never fit into any kind of genre or trend or anything. Like, people don't know what the fuck to do with us when we play festivals. We play the hardcore stage, the rock stage, the metal stage, the punk stage. Like, and so that's tricky. But at the same time, we don't sound like anyone else and it's timeless. And that's why I think we're able to be around for 25 plus years. It's a cult audience, you know?
Yeah.
I can't ever see, like, you know, having some fucking radio hit or something.
No, your fans are the best. They were back when the Moxie was around, they were very good to us as well. And I a lot of gratitude. Oh yeah.
What's really trippy on the last few tours is we've bridged generations now. There's like OG fans bringing their teenagers.
Oh my God. That's
so fucking cool to see. And sometimes it's reverse. Teenagers bringing their parents, you know? And I mean, I do that. I take my kids to Clutch and then they take me to Pierce the Veil, you know, like.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
Yeah, it's awesome.
What are some things that your parents like taught you or like gave room for you guys to like just really be who you are that you have passed along with your kiddos? Or have you like taken what kind of some lessons from them and tweaked it? Or have you been like, you know what? I don't know if I would do anything like you guys did it. This is what I do instead.
I definitely ripped a page out of Phil and Ape's book. Like they encouraged whatever we were into. My dad would drive Bam to a skate park 3 hours away. You know, he'd take off work if it was like an important contest. You know, my dad would like help me pay for recording time and stuff. So yeah, I try to do that with my kids, whatever they're into. I encourage them to be into, cause you know, that old saying, like you never work a day in your life if you like what you do. And there's people I know that are rich as fuck and miserable as hell. They're making like fucking huge salaries, but they can't stand their job. So I said, yeah, whatever you enjoy doing, like get really good at it so that people want to hire you to do it, whatever it is. And that usually works out.
How do you feel about with like in terms of like the multi-passionate side of things, right? Like I know it can be challenging to get really good at something if you're interested in a couple of things. I kind of have started doing it like a little triforce. Like I'm building a little, you know, I sort of like water the plants as I go around, like, all right, I'm doing this and then that I'm getting the skills here. And it takes a little bit longer, but you know, it's just a different like kind of approach. Is that something that you see in your kiddos at all? And like, how would you encourage that if that's something that you're, you know, you resonate with?
Yeah. With London, my son, I see that he's like starting to get into like video editing and stuff.
Oh, cool.
And I'm like, that's great, because if you enjoy doing that, like every company, like I know 20 bands right now that need video shit done, you know, edited, blah, blah, blah. So yeah, that's a great move. So, you know, I got him the Adobe Premiere, you know, editing stuff. It's so hard to keep up with that. It's like worse than Pro Tools and, you know, recording stuff. There's a new fucking thing every month.
That's, right. Right.
Super cool. That's another reason the new album is taking so long. Just oh, no. A new fucking thing every month. Chad will give me a mix. I'm like, dude, that's great. That's the final mix, right? And then he'll like be like, oh my God, dude. You know, this company just released a 2-inch tape simulator that sounds amazing. So now I have to remix it all and run it through that. It's like, Jesus Christ, dude. I know. But he's right. I'm like, oh my God, it does sound so much gnarlier. Like, I trust that he knows what he's doing, but
oh yeah, yeah.
Our fans are starting to get impatient.
It's the whole, I feel like no matter what, whether it's music or jiu-jitsu or whatever, I always giggle because I feel like I'm always like, no one to hold them, no one to fold them is kind of like the most wisdom you could apply in a lot of things, right? You're like, no one to like keep mixing, keep working, like to give yourself a good standard, and then no one to be like, all right, that's, I did it. Like, this is just a moment in time I've captured. That's what's happening, you know? Yep. And same goes.
Even Gilmore said it best, the Pink Floyd guitar player. He's like, you never finish an album. You just abandon it.
That's true.
Yeah. And that's Chad's biggest thing. Like, I'm like, dude, it's done. It's fucking done. Like, it can't get, you can't add anything else to this. Like, it sounds fucking sick.
Right.
Stop fucking around. Just, it's done. I have to be that.
Yeah. Like, you definitely sometimes need somebody to be like, all right, but it's a wrap. You did it. Like, you know, because also there's so much beauty in imperfection too. I think some of my favorite songs I just really love little pieces of whatever the song is. And it's kind of irrelevant about the other parts. As listeners, I think a lot of us feel that way, you know?
There's nothing more boring than a perfect, like, computer corrected album to me.
Yes.
I mean, Led Zeppelin is Led Zeppelin because they were on fucking angel dust when they were recording, probably. There's entire snare hits that Bonham missed because he was probably like out of his fucking mind. And that's what makes it so awesome, you know? It's human. It's four human dudes in a room playing music. And that's great. And if it was perfect, it would probably be pretty boring.
I agree. Yeah. And that's the whole thing about the creativity, right? Like, and it shouldn't be like I don't mind. Listen, do I love ChatGPT? I do. I love asking. I love the organizational. I'm like, can you help me organize all of my thoughts or whatever about how to like get things done and all of that?
When you're stuck in a lyric, like ChatGPT or any of those, like, you know, okay, here's the sentence I want to say. Help me find the right words, you know, like, and then you just keep doing it over and over and it's like, that's it.
Yeah, it's like good. I like using stuff like that to help me have idea generation a lot, especially if for me, I'm usually bouncing from one thing to my transition time between projects is not a lot. Yeah, yeah. And I personally need more transition time. So it's hard for me to like recall parts of my brain to like get to the lyric writing. Like yesterday I was doing it. I'm working on a collaboration and I was like, usually when I write melody line, I'll just kind of like hum nonsense, but I hum sort of word nonsense. And then I go back and like, I'll start hearing kind of what those words might be. And then usually things start filling in the blank. And this one in particular, there are some words.
You can't use it as a crutch. You have to just keep going. And usually the first instinct and whatever feels right is right. But if you get stuck, like, okay, I have no lyrics for this part and I'm drawing a blank here. Like when you hit a roadblock, it's great for that, you know?
Right. Right. Yeah. Cause sometimes we just need something that like I before ChatGPT and still now I use the website RhymeZone all the time. So if I'm trying to just like, I have the first line, I know the word that needs to rhyme, but I'm like, my brain gets stuck. So I'll just go on the RhymeZone and just kind of giggle at all the options that, you know, your brain's like, that doesn't make sense. Yeah. How does that word even rhyme? And then, you know, the synapses start connecting and the channeling happens. That I feel like creativity totally is a channeling experience.
I remember like busting out the thesaurus and shit. Yeah. Back in the old. And now you could be like, okay, say this and deliver it in a line that like resembles Mark Lanegan, maybe a little bit of Bob Dylan-y style. Like it's insane.
It is insane. And I find it interesting. Like granted, Terminator 2 is my favorite movie. And I, for sure, John Connor is like, what are you doing? And I get it. In terms of people being mad about it, like in a creative sense, I kind of feel like there's, at least for now, right? I don't know how bananas things are going to get, but right now, in terms of creativity, it's something to be utilized as opposed to relied on. Where if you use it, like let's collaborate and come up with even newer ideas. As long as you come back to yourself and like you said, the first idea is usually your best idea, and you're really like checking it with your own authenticity about it, right? But that's what is awesome about imagination and creativity. And you know, I'm not suggesting anyone do angel dust and record music, but I'm saying you know, the era they were in, like that was their that was their AI, let's just say that was their ChatGPT. I don't know. So yeah.
Greta, treat yourself to John Bonham isolated drum tracks for Fool in the Rain. That beat is so fucking hard to play. And the beauty of it is that it doesn't sound like it flows really good. It's just really fucking hard to play. It's like a shuffle beat that was like us drum nerds call it the Purdy shuffle, because Bernard Purdy, this drummer that recorded with like Steely Dan and stuff back in the day, kind of made it famous. So Fool in the Rain is like a Purdy shuffle with like Bonamy stuff added to it. And up until like a couple years ago, like somebody must have leaked like isolated tracks of that Led Zeppelin album. And he's so fucking drunk, he can't even count the song off. Like you can hear like him trying to sit on the drum throne and like fidgeting. Like he's so wasted, he can't even sit. And he's like trying to count it off. He can't even count. And then he busts into the beat and it's fucking flawless. It's like, what is that?
What is it? Like, what do you think it is? What is that?
I don't know. I've only ever seen that with Andy McCoy when we toured Australia and he was playing guitar. Yeah, he would get so hammered that he couldn't talk. And somebody would just prop him up on a stool and hand him a fucking guitar. And he would like shred it like flamenco styles. Like, and that's like just, you know, Andy McCoy. Hanoi Rocks, his band, invented that whole thing. Like, Motley Crue, and God damn, I heard some stories from that guy about it. But to make a very long story short, Vince Neil, you know, those guys were friends. Hanoi Rocks is from Finland, but they moved to L.A. and started that whole Sunset Strip glam thing. They kind of, like, took what the New York Dolls were doing and made it their own thing. And they're all hammered at the Rainbow one night, and Vince Neil, you know, gets a new Ferrari or something and is driving like a douchebag hammered, and he flips it and kills the drummer of Hanoi Rocks. So while the band is mourning Razzle's death, the drummer, Motley Crue basically just took their look, sound, totally ripped it, put out their first album and got massive. And Hanoi Rocks is massive in Europe and Australia, where we toured, and, you know, all over the world. But in the States, they're pretty underground still. And Motley Crue took that fucking baton and ran with it. So, Wow. Yeah. So, what the hell are we talking about? How do we get on this subject?
Oh, I mean, that was a crazy story.
Andy McCoy is just,
oh, yeah.
He's like the guy. Like, he's been doing it so long. And I had the audacity to like question him before a gig once. I was like, Andy, man, are you going to be able to play? Like, you're fucking out of your mind right now. And that's that thing. Like, he told me and Van, like, don't teach your daddy how to fuck. And like, yeah, who the hell am I to like, he was playing guitar for Iggy Pop when I was like in Huggies. So I had no business questioning his fucking shit.
You know, it's a fair question. It's fair. Yeah. Yep. You don't expect everyone to be able to do that. And probably everyone shouldn't be able to do that. But, you know,
Yeah. There
are like characters like that out in the world. Right.
Yeah. And it was a while ago when I did the first tour with him. And Bowie was still alive. And, you know, he's hammered and he says a lot of crazy things. And you kind of just listen to him like, okay, Andy. But, like, it's all true. Like, he's like, I just called Bowie and left a message. Gonna call me back. And I'm like, sure he is. And then I look at his phone, like, David Bowie. Like, what the fuck?
That's crazy. Wait, no, so you had, speaking of Bowie, wait, was it Bowie? The console you have, the Neve, right? Is that?
Well, no, the board that was at the castle and is now in its case in my garage right next to me.
Yeah.
That was, it wasn't a Neve. It's like a late 80s Midas desk. It's Midas is known for like live music consoles. And now they're like really portable and light, but this fucking thing is like my Cadillac, which is also right next to me. It's 900 pounds. It was built in England by hand, analog. And then like I think it's like an 87, 88. And then, you know, in the early 90s when they just started making like factory produced, blah, blah, blah. It wasn't built by hand anymore. But yeah, I got it from Paisley Park, Prince's studio.
Right.
And that is like, I'm sure he did have a Neve in his thing, but he had like multiple like rehearsal spots, and he probably used the board I have like for rehearsing like live stuff, and maybe recorded some stuff through it. But you know, if cool. you got a Neve, that's like a Rolls Royce.
Yeah, right. Yeah. That's so cool though. Do you have any like words of wisdom to pass along about just like resilience when things are not working? Like if there's a show, like if you've been in the middle of a show and you're like, fuck, everything is not going well. Or if you're like trying to get a project going and it just doesn't seem like it's working well. Sometimes that happens. I feel like when we are about to mm-hmm. break through, and sometimes it feels like it happens when we need to course correct a little bit. Do you agree?
Yeah. I mean, in music, like it's, everything has its ups and downs. Is like, I mean, it's been a fucking roller coaster for 25 years, you know? yeah, I just keep doing what you're doing. Don't let anything bum you out. You know, we played a show in the south of France, which was worse than the Croatia show I was talking about. And that's a bummer, you know? But then in hindsight, I'm like, well, it's the south of France. Everybody's at the fucking beach. Who's going to come to a dark club right now? But right. Yeah, it's a bummer to come from playing to 2,000 people in London and then go to mainland Europe, France, and play to a handful of people. Like, there's just going to be a whole bunch of that shit. And you just have to play like you played in London to 2,000 people, you know? And even if there's 50 people there and they have the time of their lives, that's 50 people in the south of France that aren't going anywhere.
Right, right. I feel like something that you were saying, you know, earlier about just kind of like, I got to like come home and take out the crash kind of thing. It's very like Zen of you. And I love that because I've taught myself how to kind of think in that way as much as I can. It's not my default setting by any means, but like, it's that like, I don't know. If
it's my kids, like we, the last time we played Down Low, we played to 100,000 people. So I came home just like, that was fucking insane, you know? And I'm talking like Ava about it. And she's like, cool story. We're going to be late for my fucking appointment. I'm like, oh yeah. Like, let's go. And like that put me in my place.
Yeah. Yeah, right. I don't know if it's like a Buddhist saying or something, but it's some teacher, I guess. It was just like chop wood, carry water is kind of like you just chop wood, carry water. And in a lot of ways, like that's helped me a lot. And it kind of sounds like what you're saying, like you do the thing that you love to do, chop the wood, carry the water. I mean, those sound like laborious activities, but you know what I'm saying? You just show up and you do what it is that you've set out to do. And kind of don't analyze every single step. Because when you get caught, like I think this is why I love like animal totem stuff a lot. Like I think sometimes when I find myself looking at the world through, let's just say like mouse vision, I'm like way too close to everything. This is why I love hawks and looking at the birds flying, because they're looking at the biggest picture, right? So it's, to me, it's kind of like having that mindset where you're like, I'm just going to do my thing. I'm not going to examine it too much.
Yeah, overthinking can be super bad. But at the same time, you know, I mean, like we were talking about Chad taking forever mixing it. But I mean, I get that so much because there's like songs that we put out that like have fucking 20 million streams on Spotify or whatever. And people love it. But there's one thing I fucking did that pisses me off so much every time I hear it. So I just want to make sure that there's none of those things. Right. Like I learned my lesson. Like we're recording Shock and Terror in LA, and you know, there was a fill, like a drum fill, just a stupid thing. Most people probably don't even notice. But I'm like, why did I choose to do that fill there? It doesn't make any sense. I try to like do, I don't try to do flashy things. I try to do drum stuff that complements the song and complements the change coming. And I just did some wacky ass fucking thing that I'm 46 now. I recorded that in my 20s. And I still like this, that one part of the song. I'm like, ugh. I have to listen to like the live album version of that song just so I don't hear the drum fill that annoys me.
Right. Are there songs that you still love playing as much as like the first time? And then there are songs that you're like, oh my God, I can't, I just can't anymore.
Yeah. The last tour I just told Chad and our bass player on that tour, Elvis, there's a song that I was probably in like 10th or 11th grade when we did the first like demo of it. And I'm like, I physically can't play that song again. Like I need years off from it.
Right.
I hit the wall and every time I see it on the set list, I'm like, oh God, no. but yeah, then there's songs that are just as old as that that never get old, you know, like and just feeding off the crowd helps, you know, like I play this fucking song 2,800 times, like, but seeing people so stoked makes it new again to you, you know.
yeah. Well, that's like the beauty of music in that sense. It like it brings you to the present. And the past in a way, right? Like when you listen to a song, especially from the past, it just kind of, your energy is just like really, really cool when you listen to the songs that really move you, which is what I love about music. So.
Yeah. And what's really weird is there's songs that I used to despise that we would have to do because they got popular-ish. And then a decade or whatever goes by and then you haven't heard it in years and then you listen to it again. And you're like, you see like that it's cool and that it's like naive, you know, like we were young and we wrote that and that's what's cool about it. And it's like the imperfections are kind of perfection, you know, like that's what makes it what it is. And then you start to see why it's appealing to people, you know?
Right. You have, yeah, like a different perspective on it. That's a really cool feeling for sure. Yeah. And we'll wrap. And that, is there anything that you like really, really want to get out of your body, your energy on this earth? Like, are there things that you're like, I really just have to do this in my lifetime and I haven't gotten there yet?
I want to play Red Rocks. Never have.
Me too.
I've never even been there.
Dude. I know I'm a baby musician, but me too. Like literally, yeah. I saw Tori Amos there last year, and it was life changing. Yeah. You guys should play Red Rocks.
Yeah, and I've come so close. you know Daniel Davies. He had a band called Year Long Disaster a while ago. The drummer was in Third Eye Blind, so when you know he was double booked. And had a Third Eye Blind gig. Sometimes they'd call me, sometimes they'd call the failure drummer and, you know, Carmen Aburn guy. There was like three drummers that would fill in when he couldn't do it. And I got the call for Daniel's like, you know, Daniel's like style. He's like, yeah, man, what are you doing in May? We're doing two nights at Red Rocks with Foo Fighters. Brad can't do it. Can you do it? I'm like, fuck yes. Like, even if I have something, it's canceled now. I'll be back.
Yeah, right.
You know, like, he's like, all right, cool, sweet. You know, come to LA, we'll run through the set, and then we'll go to Red Rocks. Two nights with Foo Fighters. I'm like, not only is it fucking Red Rocks, it's playing with the Foo Fighters two nights. That's insane. Yeah. So I learned their whole set, and I was like, this is going to be so rad. And then Daniel's like, oh, dude, that Third Eye Blind gig got canceled, so Brad could do it now. But thanks again, man, for being, like, you know, on standby. Oh, yeah, no problem, man. Yeah, cool. Like, you're like, oh, yeah. So oh, close. My God.
All right. Well, it's in the universe now. It will come to you. Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah. That's so cool. Any other bucket list kind of things?
Like I said, I'm a spoiled fucking brat, right now. There's like things that I can't even still comprehend. Like, you know, that Thoughts and Prayers record, like that you're all over. That was just like a what is happening right now moment, you know, like, yeah. Getting a jam with, like, you know, fucking Chuck Garrick and just legends, you know, like Scott Reeder, fucking people that I grew up listening to, you know, that they're like, yeah. They want to fucking jam with me. Like, what the hell is happening?
That's so cool. Only a
few people that hasn't happened with yet. But man, just doing that Thoughts and Prayers thing, COVID definitely helped because I knew everyone was home, not on tour, and they're just as bored as I am.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right.
So then it got like really interesting. Like, I'm going to cover a Ween song with people that have no fucking business jamming together ever. You know, like, I'm going to get Anthony Green, who's like a prog rock emo dude. And I'm going to get the Fu Manchu bass player. Like, those guys should never cross paths, but I'm going to make them cross paths. You
know? Right. You're connected.
Yeah. And the song that you gave me, that one was so much fun. Like, it's an 80s tune, right?
Spin Me Around. Yeah.
But, like, it's so rad how you David Lynched it up and, like, made it sound like Portishead or something. You know, like, you made it, like, dark and slow and, like, frightening.
Yeah.
in an awesome way. Yeah, like, yeah. I love that shit. It's honestly,
for being a generally cheery person with an emo soul, I definitely, yeah, I do love, that's why I like doing the film
all,
side,
all like, the mellow rock records hit the hardest, like, that's why I like Nick Cave and all that so much, like, he's the master of that kind of stuff. But then, like, so we do our thing, I go up to the Poconos, right, and that was so much fun because it was so out of my comfort zone, but like, I'm so into it.
And I loved, like, it,
okay, the snare is way too abrasive for this super dark song, so then you're like, here, and hand me a SpongeBob blanket, and I throw it over the snare drum, and that's exactly what it needed to deaden it. And then we got fucking Tyler and Joel. Yeah. Tyler plays guitar for Killswitch Engage. This is as far from Killswitch as it gets. And like, they sent their guitars back, and it was fucking insane.
My brain melted with all of that. I was so, like, happy you guys.
You know what's cool? I don't know if you remember, but so they did like guitar tracks that sounded kind of like The Cure or kind of something that molded with it. But then just because they're metal guys from New England, they had to do that wall of like distorted guitar
sound. I love it.
It's
I don't
know. Buried in the mix, but it's there. It's just there enough to know that it's like those metal dudes from New England had to add their stamp on it. That's what made it so fucking unique. And that whole record is just full of stuff like that. That's why it just has a special place in my heart. But I gave the money to help. It was basically like a victims of mass shootings, school shootings, stuff like that. So in America, that's not the best thing. Any kind of gun regulation. That album didn't sell great, but
it was
good in Europe and places. But you know, any kind of, you're giving the money to who? Fuck this. Even if they love it, like, Gene Ween's on it and Neil Fowell from Clutch. But fuck, I'm not giving my money to that.
I wonder if it'll age differently, though. Like, I wonder, you know what I mean? It's the kind of thing that will continue to have new life, probably, because it really is, like, the most unique collection. And thank you for including me on it. I was very, very honored to be a part of that.
Oh, yeah. And you gretted the hell out of it in the best way. Pairing you up with Chuck Garrick from Alice Cooper or Neil Fallon. It's so cool to, like, the contrast, you know? But, yeah. It's aging well, and there's still people, like, it's been out a couple years at this point, and there's people still finding out about it. Like, you know, fans of, like, Circa Survive, and, you know, it's like, what the fuck? Like, Anthony Green singing a Ween song with a CKY guy? And, like, how did I miss this, you know?
How did I miss this? Exactly. I know. I think it'll definitely age well in that sense, because I feel like, you know, people are still, I think, kind of coping and bouncing back from that time period, and maybe have more energy to consume something new and wonderful now, you know? Yeah. Like, it was kind of like,
there's so much, like, stuff out. Yeah. It's so hard to keep up with. There's still people to this day that don't know the company band, you know? And we'll do, like, meet and greets before the show sometimes, and we always ask questions and you get every once in a while, like, oh yeah, you're my top three. CKY is in my top three favorite bands. Oh cool, who's the other one? Clutch. I'm like, oh, you know the company band? No, what's that? Have I got a band for you to listen to? Clutch and then the drummer of CKY and together, and they're like, get the fuck out of here, you know. Yeah. It was like a decade ago, and they're like, what?
Oh my god. Yeah. Oh my god.
I love it. Right? I love seeing that shit. It's so cool.
That's so cool. Mm-hmm. I definitely miss living near you, in the sense of you just being like, hey, do you want to come sing on this thing? And I'm like, yeah, what is it?
I'm glad we finally got to hang recently when we played Colorado. Yeah.
I know. That was awesome. That was awesome.
That was a fun hang. But yeah, we need to do more.
Yeah. Yeah. I know. I got to send you some new things, and we'll
definitely. Know.
Thank you so much for doing this. Is there anything else you want to add for anybody who maybe is curious about being a musician or a drummer, or just living a life that nobody maybe, that they were told they're going to work at McDonald's?
We should do this again and take Q&As.
Yes. I mean, I would definitely love, especially as I get things, like as I learn how to do, you know, all of this.
But yeah, it's cool. I've become a fan of the podcast format. Like, you know, when it first came out, it's like, oh, everybody's got a fucking podcast about anything and everything. But, you know, you can get, like, in depth with details, and there's no time limit. And there's a lot of people that I want to hear all the stuff they have to say and not be limited on a TV show. Like, all right, you got 5 minutes to promote.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I want to hear people just talking. And I genuinely love just, like, hearing people's stories. And I kept wanting to do this, and I kept, because I don't fit into a niche with what I want to share, I was like, I don't know, blah, blah, blah. But I'm just kind of like, fuck it. I'm going to do it. And hopefully, you know, people, whoever hears it, hopefully they're like, oh, that landed for me. And I feel very strongly about that kind of way of being in the world, is just like passing good things along and hoping that that just continues to go. So I'm very much like, this has been the happiest I've been doing a project besides music. So I'm like, okay, I'll do it.
And like I said, there's a lot of people that ask me advice, and then I'm like, I give them what I know that's still relevant, but then I learn so much from them, because they're coming up in a whole new industry that I still have a lot to learn. And I like hearing what they're doing. Like, especially you were talking about, like, you know, getting into music licenses and stuff. We CKY especially has not really, like, charged at that animal yet. You know, we're lucky bastards again that we get hit up by Netflix shows and stuff to do stuff like that. But, you know, it'd be cool to hire one of those placement companies, and, you know, they pitch this fucking Hulu show would be perfect for this song that you have.
Your music would be great for it. There was a song I was listening to of yours the other day. I'll have to send it to you. I don't remember, but it was not one that I heard before, and I think it was a collaboration. Let me see if I can pull it up real quick. But I was like, oh, fuck yeah, this would be awesome in a movie. Let me see. Internet slow. But yeah, you guys would have really... I mean, people would be so excited. I'm not sure which one. I'll have to check. I'm not sure which one this. Yeah,
I can't remember.
I just remember I was listening to it and I was like, this would be fucking cool, you know, in like a movie or something. Like it, there's certain vibes to certain songs, and you guys have a ton of them. So I would love to see you guys doing that. Yeah. A whole new chapter.
That's like an exciting newer thing. Like, I mean, that's always been around, but now it's like such a thing. And there's shows and movies I watched that like the soundtrack fucking makes it, you know, like it's a good movie, but like, holy fuck, they put that fucking Pixies song right there. Like, and it matches the vibe and the visuals. Like, that's such a thing.
I know. I mean, honestly, that's what I find for me right now. Like, that's what I get most. Like the movie trailers, I love writing them because they're just like the perfect, like, cinematic expression of just the most intense sounds. Like, you know, everything that I love about like intense music, I can put in there. It's like bigger, louder. And then the storytelling of like the other songs. Did you see the most recent season of True Detective? That's in Alaska. Dude, it's in
Alaska.
Ooh, I get chills. You should definitely, before it gets too warm out, you should watch it because it's cold. It's like the whole thing is pretty much at nighttime because the sun, you know, it's Alaska. So it's winter in Alaska. There's no sunlight however long. It is so good. And the music for it, just, it was one of my favorite like pieces that I've seen recently.
Missy Rothstein's been really pushing me and Michelle to Matthew McConaughey a lot. So isn't he in that?
Oh, he's in the first one, I think.
Yeah,
he's great. I feel like he would be, you know, a friend, but
like a book. I'm like, I know why you're into.
No, the last one actually is Jodie Foster, and then this girl, Kali Rice, I think. I don't know how you say her last name, but she's amazing. She actually, so in the show, they're both cops and investigating, and she's just cool. And then she was throwing some punches at some dude, and I was like, she's a fighter. Like, I think that she's an actual, like, a real fighter. And it turns out she's a boxing champ. It was her first acting role, and she killed it. And I just love, like...
Yeah, she's awesome,
man. She's so cool. Yeah, and Jodie Foster.
I just watched Panic Room the other day. Remember that?
Oh, yeah.
That.
Yeah, yeah.
I love all those David Fincher movies.
I know. They're so good.
Game. You ever watch The Game?
Yes.
That's, yeah, like, one of them.
Dude, I think about that movie every now and then. I'm like, oh my God. Yeah. It's like a very existential movie for sure.
With one of those endings that's like, what the fuck?
What the fuck?
What is happening right now?
It's the best. It's the best. I mean, that's again like the craft, right? Of storytelling and the fact that somebody cared enough about that story. That's what I always think about whenever I watch stuff like this. I'm like, somebody cared enough to do everything involved to get this to the end. And you're just like, respect.
Because Sean Penn, his brother, Michael Douglas, I don't want to ruin the movie too much, but he's just a rich fucking prick that doesn't appreciate anything. And then he hires the service to make him think that he's been conned. And now he's broke in Mexico begging for change. And it gets them to appreciate things and be a cooler dude. It's fucking me.
it's like Scrooge is a story, right? Like it's that storyline of like perspective that it's just always, it's just not a Christmas movie. It's like a thriller instead.
He grew up super rich his whole life. Doesn't know anything else. It's made him into a fucking prick. And then he lost it. And now he's humbled and it's got a new outlook. I love movies like that.
I do too. I do too. Oh, Jess, thank you so much for doing this. I really appreciate it. And it's been fun. Yeah. I remember our chats in the morning on the tour bus when I was, you're the only person, I was the only person up and you're the only person up. And yeah, besides.
Yeah. We're on the fuck face unstoppable tour. God knows what is going on in the front lounge. There's like rando groupies, probably tons of drugs. And then there's me and Greta in the back lounge watching Harry Potter. Oh, check out my pants. Can you see that?
Yes. Oh, that's awesome. Speaking of Harry Potter. Wait, what's your sweatshirt?
It's Elvis.
Yes. I love it. Elvis and Harry Potter.
Yeah, it's like a Japanese Elvis tour poster or something.
That's awesome. Oh my God, I love it. I'm wearing my brother-in-law's. This is my brother-in-law's shirt. Bonehead. Cool.
What is that?
Sean, Allie's husband. Sean's company, Bowhead. He does like rad designs. And we went to visit them and I didn't pack enough things. I thought that I packed enough, but I didn't. Mm. And then happily, Sean was like, well, by the way, I have all of these shirts and sweatshirts from his company. And he was like, do you want any?
Is it a merch company or do they do stuff like make stuff?
Yeah, I mean, he does mainly merch. I know he's going to probably do some jiu-jitsu things, some surf thing. He's like, you know, they're on the coast of California, so it's a very like surf vibe, which is cool. Yeah. But yeah, I'll send you the page, the link and everything. I love the stuff. I love this shirt.
It looks like it's inspired by the Santa Cruz.
Yeah.
That makes sense. It's Southern California, you know. Yeah,
they lived really close to Santa Cruz for a while, and I think he was definitely this design in particular. But his designs are really—they're interesting. They're really interesting. I love them. They're cool. But yeah, this has been one of my new favorite shirts, and I had all this room in my bag. I was able to stuff in like three sweatshirts and like three shirts. I was like, all right, I thought I didn't have enough, and instead I had plenty of room, so it was good. All right, dude. Thank you so much. This was great. I definitely want to do this again. And we'll do like some kind of question answer or something and all that.
Sure. That's a good idea.
Yeah.
Because people used to ask me questions on Twitter and now I just bitch about Trump and JD Vance and Elon all day. And they're like, sick.
Well, I think you have so much wisdom to share, you know, and maybe. Like, I know for me, getting older at least has been fun in the sense that I feel like I obviously don't have kids. So I'm in like the big sister, auntie kind of role where I want to like just encourage. I've always wanted to encourage everyone around me, but there's a little bit of a different feeling to it. And I want to hear what they're doing. And I want to, you know, is there something that I can help you with or whatever? And you have, like I said, such a unique perspective and all of that. You have a lot of wisdoms to share. Plus you're a papa, so you're already doing that. You got practice, right?
I try to offer advice and not be act like some know-it-all bullshit dude, but yeah, if someone wants to know, I'll answer as honest as possible.
Yeah. I mean, there's no other you. So, you know, I think,
mostly because my memory is so bad and I can't lie about anything because my lies won't line up. So I have to just tell the truth, even if it's gnarly, because I'm not going to, if it comes back around again, I won't remember any bullshit that I told. So.
You're like, I don't know.
Yeah.
That's a good way to be. You're just like, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a good way to be for sure. All right, dude. I'm going to go teach some ladies how to choke people.
Oh, yeah. More fun.
Yeah.
Well, have fun and thanks for having me.
Thank you so much, Jess. I really appreciate it. And give Michelle my love, please, and all the kiddos as well. All right. Big hugs. Bye.
Virtual hugs.
Virtual hugs. All right. Thank you.
Yep.
Hopefully I can figure this out. All right. Bye. Okay,
see ya.
Bye.
If I get to know your name, well, if I could trace your private number, baby, all I know is that to me, you look like you Open up your loving arms, watch out, here I come.